Want to do a check? Is it good? Wonderful. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2016. A new year with lots in front of us. It should be very, very interesting. I am excited. As I thought about this new year and it being specifically, you know, with refugees coming to Canada and having that welcoming spirit and so on, we have lots of challenges kind of to try to figure out together. And that's fine. That'll happen. And the SPY team, Service Planning Implementation team, we're thinking about that together and how does GNF respond and what does that look like for us? And what does that look like for our community in the new year? And is there space here for us to even think about having, you know, a Catholic priest or Anglican priest or someone from another side of our own faith come in and speak about how they experience and express faith and their walk with God? Would it be safe enough to have someone, a Baha'i person or a Buddhist or someone else come in and not to just do the talk? I still think good news is good news. It's the gospel. We're good news focused. But are we a safe enough community to say, gee, we'd like to learn about that and to hear someone else's heart and then share our heart, hopefully the heart of Christ, with them? And how does that work? What would it even look like? Lots of interesting things, and not to stir a giant pot that doesn't need to be stirred, but it begs the question, how do we, as followers of Jesus at Good News Fellowship, step forward into 2016 with all that's in front of us and do that in a Christ-centered way that expresses Christ-like love to a very broad culture in which we live? And so I thought, maybe to do that, to set the tone first, and for me, setting that tone would be to address this neat little argument, philosophical, I don't know, two different perspectives. People seem to look at it from and think in terms of exclusivity. We need to be exclusively about Christ, which is great. That's why they call this Good News Fellowship, for one. And how do we then be inclusive? Because God certainly is. And what does that look like? And then how crazy is that to see that both are biblical? And if they are, is that an oxymoron? Are they at odds with one another, or are they not at odds with one another? So, I want to speak to that this morning and start off with exclusivity. I think that Jeremy did a wonderful job of setting the tone for that, and he didn't have a whole lot to go on either, but the Lord worked there as well. Certainly the first song, thinking about not just despite my sin, God did not come and express his love and give to me despite my sin, but because of it. Think about that just for a sec. I mean, if I, you know, before marriage, you're engaged, and you love the person that you are engaged to. Not because they're so awesome, but because of the manner in which they hurt you. Let that sink in for a sec. That you are so loved that someone popped the question to you. Not despite selfishness, but because of it and because of how it hurt the person who popped the question. That's crazy. That was the first song. And then the second one, cornerstone, is you are Lord of all, everything. And not just in terms of creation, but as far ranging as our own emotions and twisted minds can take us. As far crazy as we can imagine God's love would extend. Lord of all. And then the last one, love came down. It's basically saying, when I can't find my way through, when I can't hear you, when it doesn't make sense anymore, I will stand here and lift my hands. I will say, I can't, but you can. Because your love came down to rescue me. It is a song that confesses that I am the betrothed. Think about that. That's exclusive. God exclusively pops the question to you and I. And we have to take ownership of that. At some point, you got to say yes. Or, no, don't think so. There is a time to choose. Okay. So we'll try this. I had some slides. So I want to do 1 John chapter 4 with you. And 1 John 4 is kind of in two sections. And one is about exclusivity, and the other side of 1 John 4 is inclusivity. And I want to start with the exclusive. And it starts with this. Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirit to see whether they are from God. Because many false prophets have gone out into the world. And this is how we can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming and even now is already in the world. Now that's only a couple verses to start off with. Here, John is addressing a particular spirit that has been arguing that maybe Jesus isn't fully God, fully man. Maybe there's something off with that. And it couldn't be both. Right, and so it was an argument against the dual natures, and so humanity did what we always do. We try to rationalize that. Well, maybe Jesus wasn't fully God until maybe he was baptized. That was it. That's when he was full. Oh, wait, no, maybe he's not fully man, but fully God, because, fully man couldn't have sustained everything. It must have been God who was in the wilderness, but then how? You're going to run into all kinds of problems doing that. But that's what people did. And suffice to say that it came up, is he really the Son of God is the big question. And it's not. It's a red herring. But John nevertheless says it is important for you and I to test the spirits. Interesting. To test the spirit of each other, to see whether or not that is born of the Holy Spirit or not. And he doesn't give us a nice guideline that says, Here's how you can tell no, and here's how you can tell yes, for sure. We have clues, we have feelings, we have thoughts, but ultimately, it's Jesus who gives the parable, right? When the disciples come and say, we're pretty sure those are tares in the field, and they could identify them, and we can identify them, but Jesus says, yeah, well, don't uproot them. Continue to love them. They continue to be included until the moment I exclude them. That's not your job. Now, that's a really interesting thought. And so we can be confused by what path we think people are on. I think I've showed some of these before. Could you just advance for me? Thank you. So here's a bunch of paths. You can see these triangles going up. You can see there's a dove in the background. There's a cross in the background. We believe Christ is the center. That ultimately, obviously, is the good news. But it's hard to see which path is going where and who is on what path. The two curved lines that go up just to the right of the cross together and then come to a point, I would say that's... For me, that feels like Christianity and a little bit like good news. Curves through all these others. But it's really confusing. So the question is, which path? So there are many paths, and they can be confusing. We can go to the next one. But what we can be sure of is that Jesus Christ will locate us. That's what we can be sure of, right? You can't always tell what path someone might be on. Sometimes... Or the fact that they may change paths halfway through their life. You don't, who knows? But what I do know is God promises Christ will find us. He will locate us on the path. It's he that came here to earth. This is what we celebrated. He came to find us. And we are promised that the Holy Spirit, signified by the dove, will lead us. Okay, so... So we can have some more clarity about pathways if we see the next one here. And continue. Yeah. So I colored them. Oh, so they can be more distinct. They become more distinct when you learn about them. And you go, okay, now I see. Oh, yes, well, that's a little bit more defined for me now, right? Now I understand how that, and then we get to see how it intersects with our own and with others and so on. And so that might be important for us to do. Okay, the thing to remember is, if we go to the next one, is that the straight lines in the pathway would say what we must do to attain a peaceful afterlife. Those are different faith walks and pathways and journeys that are defined by what you and I must do. The curved one, what I would call the Christian one, focuses on what Christ did for us. That's the most significant difference in identifying different pathways. And I say this because, and it makes us seem exclusive, because now we're excluding ourselves from those other pathways and saying, no, we are more exclusively this way. And that seems like a thing that we're not supposed to do in today's culture. And I find that stupid. I'm sorry. That's just dumb. Really? I look at something like, the Lions Club, devoted to what? Destroying polio worldwide. And if that's your heart and you have family with polio and that's something you want, you know what? Knock yourself out. You should do that. You should get in there like a dirty shirt and eradicate polio and have fun with the Lions Club and get involved with them and help raise grant money for foreign students coming in and what they, you know, do it. But if you're not about polio and your thing is, you know, what the Knights of Columbus are doing, then go with the Knights of Columbus. But don't hang out with the polio group, the Lions Club, and beat them up for not being these guys. That's just dumb. Same difference. Here we are. We are on this curved path. Simple. That's what we focus on. Okay. Now, that does beg some questions. And so now we can move on and we can define some different pathways. So now you can actually name them. Let's not be afraid to do that and call the spade a spade. So what? Big deal. Are they different? Yes. Are we exclusive? Yes. Note the Christian ones, these four: Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, Coptic, and Protestant. Okay. Then the next one then. These are ones that say they're Christian. Nice curved lines, curved pathway, right? But all these ones, look at the names. None of them will confess. And this is what 1 John chapter 4 is all about. Is Jesus the Christ? Is he the Son of God? And I hate to say it, but only the Coptic, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, Catholic here. You might come up with another, I think, possible. But we'll say Jesus, that's what Jesus is, the second part of the Godhead, the Son of God, the Christ, the Messiah. Fully man, fully God. All these other ones have a seemingly Christian sort of a bent in them, or try to confess that somewhat, or talk about God. Some of them even talk a little bit Trinitarian language, but none of them will say that specifically Jesus Christ is the Christ, the Messiah. Okay, so now just for you and I here, and just for those of you who are with Good News Fellowship, this is where we locate ourselves here in terms of the Christian faith. So if we go to the next slide, now we're going to see here. And so we start with the Holy Catholic Church. That's split into Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic. The Coptics came out of there as well. Then you have the mainline Protestant, of which we are a part, Good News Fellowship. And you have the Evangelical Protestant, which is a different theological base. Similar, arguable, I suppose. But again, we end up doing all kinds of exclusionary kinds of talk with each other because, you know, the Baptists this and Anglicans and those, oh, the Protestants, you know, whatever. But we are probably middle of the road. And the farther to the right you are, the more aligned you are with Roman Catholic, the farther to the left, the farther away from the original Catholic. What does this do? I don't know. Help to give you a perspective in terms of, A, there is a history for us, albeit it's not always a great history, in terms of the Christian faith. But there is a way to kind of think about ourselves and locate ourselves both theologically and historically, just as church. Simple. Okay. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with exclusive, inclusive, but just to locate yourself. Now, the next slide, this is simple. Is Jesus God the Son? That's it. That's the big question. That's all that you need to answer, regardless of where you might locate yourself in either the Catholic, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, or Coptic tradition. Or whether you have another faith group. Whether you're a pseudo-Christian faith group or other, Baha'i, Islam, Indian, you still have to answer that question, I guess. Is Jesus God the Son? Now, if we continue in 1 John 4, next slide, you will read this. And you, dear children, are from God. You have overcome them, the others, because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. Now you're really starting to sound exclusive, aren't you? You have overcome as a kind of a us and them language. They are from the world and therefore speak from the viewpoint of the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God, and whoever knows God listens to us, but whoever is not from God does not listen to us. And this is how we recognize the spirit of truth and the spirit of falsehood. Is that clear or is that muddy? See, my thing is that for Good News Fellowship, this should be clear. And my bet is, for lots of us, it seems muddy. But my bet is, if you join us in a small group and we begin to chat together about this, what this means, you will say, oh, that's what that is. Oh, I get that. Now that's clear. And it's called testing the spirits. You'll know when something is from God and when it's not. You'll just know in your heart. Either you'll have peace about it or not. And there are times when we can be confused about something. Lord knows, Liz and I, we've had experienced confusion too. Is GNF where God would have us go? Is this where God would have us, you know, do? I mean, we've tried to answer that question lots of different times in our lives. And sometimes you put out the fleece and then God answers your little challenge. And at other times, he leaves us kind of guessing. But definitely, you can hear when someone is speaking from the viewpoint of the world or the viewpoint of faith in God, creator of heaven and earth. Why this emphasis from God? If you read this, you dear children are from God. They are from the world. We are from God. We are from God, and whoever knows God listens to us. Whoever is not from God does not. Why this emphasis? That's the next slide. From God. That's the question that these verses in John, 1 John 4, bring to my mind. I get the exclusivity thing that John is speaking to, but he sets up this really us and them thing right here in these verses. Why is that so important, John? Next slide says, we know we are from God only when we have come to the realization that God came to find us for one reason, to ask for our hand in marriage. We know that we are his when we know how much he loves us, when he pops the question, when we finally get in the ring, when we say yes, then we are his. Think about it for your own life personally. You can flip through this next bunch of pictures here. These pictures are depicting engagement. Do you remember? There's a reason that Jesus says to the church of Ephesus, listen, I get your orthodoxy. I get your us and them thing. I get the fact that you test the spirits, you guys. I get the fact that every time someone wants to be an elder or they step up into your church, you ask the question and you test the spirit of that person. Jesus doesn't have a problem with that kind of exclusivity, but he does have a problem when the exclusivity does not allow for inclusivity, and we kick people. And Jesus says to them, but this I have against you guys for all of that exclusivity, that you neglected your first love. Remember the height from which you have fallen and do the things you did at first. go back. Go back to this. Remember when I popped the question? Remember when we started out together? Remember when you said yes? Remember the thrill of the moment? And so there's lots of different ways in which you may have experienced this. We go on, there's a bunch of different ones. You just run through them a little bit. Just give a couple seconds for each. Maybe you had a creative one, right, in the sand, a surprise from God. Maybe God did something miraculous in terms of getting your attention here with a dolphin. Maybe it's more God. Maybe your Manitoban God had more Manitoban style with you, snow and hockey and so on, I don't know. But God's love for us is exclusive. And we, in turn, are to express that love, exclusivity, unashamedly, and with force, and without reserve. That is what is asked from the betrothed. That's what we are asked for. We are told in the next slide that he emptied himself to come and find us and demonstrate the exclusive nature of his love for us. Do you and I get this? In Philippians chapter 2, we got a bunch of pictures here to go through again. This, that God emptied himself so that he could come and find us. You realize this? Yes, he came as a baby. Yeah, and emptied of power. He left this behind. Are you kidding me? John says there's nothing that was created that was not created through Christ. This was done by Christ. This little baby did that. And he holds it in his hand like nothing. Black holes and suns and just amazing stuff. Continue west, just like nebulas and vast parts of our galaxy. No big deal for Jesus. Here, look on my finger. Isn't that cool? Look at that planet. Like, are you kidding me? Saturn, just absolute off-the-hook beauty and power beyond your and my wildest imagination. And he came to come here to find, to locate you and me on our pathway on this little blue planet, third from the sun. And you know what? Never mind the vast galaxies. We get scared of stuff like a storm. Me, I get scared of things like spiders. I totally, next one is about a tarantula. Oh, yeah, those two things I'm not good with. You want to see me have humongous angst? Bring them two in here. I will be freaked out. I can't do that. Now, that doesn't bother me, but some other people, the graveside just creates incredible anxiety. You get this? This funny little contrast here? We have Jesus, Son of the Most High, through whom all things were made, who holds vast systems and planets and power and just incredible stuff in his hand. No big deal. And you and I sometimes get afraid and bent out of shape about these things. And get misdirected somehow from remembering that the one who holds all that power in his hand comes to this little planet and he says to you and me, marry me. I want you. Yeah, I know you hurt me. Yes, I know you were selfish, and that ended up killing me, but I want you anyway. I want you. And I want an answer. You think if he gave up all of that, he gave up all of that to come and locate you and me on this little blue planet, allow our junk to nail him to a cross, and then he comes and says to me, I want you. I did all that to come get you. That he doesn't want an answer? That he would not require for you and I to say yay or nay? Exclusively to him? if we are to imagine that exclusivity is by and large an incredibly negative thing in our communities and something that we don't really want to get into, something that we want to steer clear of, then we may miss this. Because all of the inclusivity that is supposed to be part and parcel of who we are as followers of Jesus Christ doesn't mean squat without the exclusive love and our agreement. Next couple of slides are just simple. Are you the beloved, overwhelmed by his deep, deep, deep affection for you? John's argument is that when his affection overwhelms us, we will not dare to give our affection to another. As his fiancé of the king, we have privilege, we have power, responsibility, and we have all obligations of royalty. And now I would like to read the last part of 1 John chapter 4. Because this part, the inclusivity part, doesn't mean squat without the exclusive part. Dear friends, let's love one another, for love comes from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love doesn't know God, because God is love. And this is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sin. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. And this is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and testify that the Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them, and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love that God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. And this is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear is to do with punishment, and the one who fears is not made perfect in love. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God and yet hates a brother or sister is a liar, for whoever does not love their brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command: anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. John's argument, actually very simple. God's love is so intense, so massively intense, so exclusively focused on finite beings like you and I, that it cannot help but to affect a change that gives us the Spirit that is needed to love others in the same way. Not in our own human way, not as the world does, which is nice a lot of times, but the way he does. So when I say that we as GNF have some challenges in front of us in 2016, most of them pale in comparison to this. Really? Despite all the craziness going on in our world and maybe the stuff that's in front of us, remember, you are the betrothed, the beloved, the honored. And the lengths that were gone through to get you are off the hook. They're beyond anything we could imagine. We are His. We are His. We are His. And yeah, he's got a plan. And 2016 should hold great stuff for us. Great stuff. I look forward to it, not because 2016 holds so much promise. I look forward to it because God holds so much promise. Join me to say thank you for a moment before we continue. Father in heaven, I thank you that you are full of grace and truth, and that you are always somehow trying to get us to experience and know and feel and understand in our heart and soul and our bodies that you are about putting your arms around us, that you are about rescuing us, that you are about having your hand upon us in amazing and wonderful ways. And I pray, Father, that in 2016 we may experience that with a renewed intensity, that we know we are exclusively yours. Thank you. Thank you for sending your Son. Thank you for emptying yourself in order to come and locate us and get us. And I pray that you would give us everything that we need, that you will endow us with huge power and ability and affection beyond our wildest dreams for others in our community. And that we find creative ways, Lord, to express that, ways that reflect you as our Creator, so that all may know we are made in your image, it is your love that does it, and we are your obedient servant. May others find in us your grace and your love as overwhelming as we are.